Now, first off, I wanted to ask you, Charlottesville, I think the thing that stunned a lot of people is that you've got neo-Nazis, white nationalists, KKK, marching with torches, swastikas, hateful slogans, and with their faces uncovered. There's no shame attached to these activities anymore. It stunned a lot of people, but after everything you've seen over the last few years, has it surprised you at all?
In some ways, I think it really has shocked many people to see how blatant the racism has become, but also to hear it being endorsed from the highest office in the land. Obviously, as I'm sure your listeners will know, Trump has, you know, equivocated, and only 2 days after someone was killed during this rally in Charlottesville did he actually denounce white supremacists explicitly, only to then backtrack and blame both sides equally. So in some ways, it's really quite at a level of emboldenment for these neo-Nazis that we really haven't seen in decades. But on the other hand, I don't think that this came out of nowhere. I think that many of the policies that Trump is championing all along on his campaign, from protesters being beaten up at his rallies and him endorsing that, to a law and order approach to protesters and to Black Lives Matter activists and over-policing in their communities, to failure to denounce David Duke of the KKK immediately, that didn't come out of nowhere. But I think what's different in Charlottesville is the level of organization and the premeditation with which these neo-Nazis have converged on this city with the intention of saying, we can do this anywhere, anytime, in a liberal college town, anywhere.
And you're quite right there. President Trump's come out and blamed both sides, this supposed alt-left as well as the alt-right. I just wanted to sort of, you mentioned, of course, Black Lives Matter there, and you've been doing some activism with Black Lives Matter. What's your reaction to the kind of people who call Black Lives Matter a hate organization in the wake of events like this?
I think that this sort of sense has really made clear that people need to take a side. That there really is one side that came to Charlottesville with the intention of stoking racism and terror, whereas people who came opposing that, opposing it because really it's something that can't be ignored or allowed to spread and grow unchallenged. Clearly, there's no equivalence between the people who are stoking that violence and intimidation with the intent of making it impossible to continue to rally against things like racist police brutality or for immigrant rights or in solidarity with Muslims. There's no equivalence between that and the people who are gathering with the intent of exposing it. And of course, with something like Black Lives Matter, it's not merely a matter of a response to Trump in particular or exposing this particular manifestation of racism. It's been about the racism that really is built into this country's history from the very beginning and has continued in various ways, most prominently recently through the criminal justice system, or injustice system, as it is more accurately referred to by activists.
Now, the far-right terror attack that killed one of the anti-racism protesters in Charlottesville, Heather Heyer, he injured a number of other people as well. Is that going to make you or anyone you know rethink how to organize some of these protests in future?
I think that's a very important question, because even before the escalation of violence, there has been a recruitment drive and an attempt by right-wing speakers to speak on various college campuses under the guise of free speech, and to claim that they're really the ones who are under attack in this period because of so-called political correctness. And I think that Charlottesville has really exposed that for what it is, that they're actually intent on creating a bigger space, not only for their racist rhetoric, but actually for violent intimidation. What I think is really key is that over 400 parts of the country have so far had protests in solidarity with Charlottesville. And that's despite their attempt to intimidate us and make us fearful. I think it would be a capitulation. But I think in the wake of those speeches on college campuses, one of the debates has been, from more of a liberal perspective, do we give them more of a platform by giving them attention? Should we just ignore them and they'll go away? Or another argument has been about more of a black box style tactic of trying to confront them with smaller groups of people who are willing to defend the rallies against violence. But I think that the only way we're actually going to be successful is we need the broadest mobilization possible. One, we absolutely need to confront them. If they go unopposed, then they will not back down. They will see it as a victory, which the alt-right and neo-Nazi websites see Charlottesville as a major victory. So we need to confront them everywhere we go. But we need the largest numbers. The truth is that as emboldened as they are, as much as Trump is giving them a bigger platform, they are still a minority. And if our side is organized in its full capacity of all the people who have been under attack, not only by Trump's rhetoric, but by these, you know, hate groups, we will be in a stronger position to prevent them from continuing to terrorize our communities.
And just as a final point, Haley, we mentioned before you're in Sydney for the Socialism 2017 conference. Now, socialism, it's a bit of a dirty word here in Australia, but it's a much dirtier word over in the United States. I'm just curious, what kind of result are you looking for when you advocate for such a radical change back home?
I'm really glad you asked that question. The fact is, although Trump represents, I think, one part of the polarization that we're seeing in the U.S., which aims to scapegoat and blame various groups that are actually largely oppressed populations for the crisis that is a genuine crisis in our society. If you look at the opioid epidemic, if you look at the levels of inequality, if you look at the levels of underemployment or our healthcare system or any number of things, there's really a genuine crisis in our society. And I think that Trump was able to tap into that for a number of people. But the other side of the equation is that a year ago, in a country where socialism has been a dirty word, over 11 million people were willing to vote for Bernie Sanders, who was an open socialist in a country that, as you said, has been hostile to that. I think there's people who understand that the problem is not just Trump or even Charlottesville, that that's really a symptom of a much bigger crisis and a bigger problem. And I think that the answer to that is, on the one hand, we need an alternative that actually cuts through the scapegoating and points to the fact that figures like Trump himself, the richest cabinet in history, the greatest inequality in one of the richest countries of the world, the fact that the victims in Charlottesville are going to have to pay their own medical expenses or, you know, crowdsource in order to even be able to afford them, because we live in such an uncivilized country in terms of seeing healthcare as a right. There's so many spaces in which to galvanize people to come together that Trump represents an attack on all of us, but we also have to look to the broader system that spawned him, and that I think is very much represented by the idea of socialism and the idea that these attacks are not isolated. They're actually part of a broader problem, protecting the wealth and inequality and dividing our side from being able to resist. And the only positive, if there is one, of Trump's presidency is that more people have been galvanized by that idea and are gravitating towards solidarity as the solution.
Well, Haley, best of luck over the weekend, and I do hope you enjoy your time in Sydney. I really appreciate you joining us this morning.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.